Hello, hello, and welcome again to a weekly Beatles program that we call Things We Said Today. I'm one of the co-hosts of the show, Ken Michaels, and many of you know me for another Beatles program that I host, which is called Every Little Thing, syndicated around the country, heard on terrestrial radio and also internet radio as well. And on this program, we tackle what's happening in the news with the Beatles, and I'm joined by my co-host, a man who wears many hats. He writes for Beatles Examiner.
And I'm wearing a hat right now.
That's, well...
Because it's cold.
And I'm not even seeing you, and I know that.
And
I just feel it.
You're not even seeing me, and you know that. There we go.
He's also the author of a new book on Davy Jones.
Yep.
And so many other things, many different Examiner columns. Steve Marinucci. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Ken. Hello, everyone.
Before we start, just want to thank, because we don't do it often enough, Sir Michael Lynch, the man who wrote the theme for our show.
The wonderful theme.
Yes, the theme for Ken and Steve.
Yep.
And he's going to do a new one called the theme for Steve and Ken. It's going to be backwards, actually.
Oh, my God.
In the true spirit of, you know, the Beatles.
Is it going to be all backwards and with all the sound effects and everything?
I think so.
Oh,
I'll leave it up to him. He's a whiz at these things.
Here we go.
He's a wonder when he gets going.
There we go.
So on the program today, this is going to be an interesting topic. I was looking through your Beatles Examiner columns, as I do every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly hope everyone who's listening is doing the exact same thing, to stay on top of everything going on with the Beatles. And one of the things that struck me, and actually it didn't surprise me at all, is that just like 50 years ago when the Beatles launched an assault on the American charts, here it is 50 years later, and the Beatles have 13 albums on the Billboard album charts. And no doubt, this is mainly due to all of the interest and, you know, we can call it hype, around the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' arrival in America, and certainly because of that CBS special that aired on February 9th, the same anniversary of the Ed Sullivan Show. But 13 albums is just so impressive, and we're going to talk about that, and I thought we'd also talk about Paul McCartney's new CD and how that performed on the charts, as well as try to relate that to the Beatles' on-air CD, as well as this onslaught of 13 albums on the charts. That's just this week as we're doing it. Could change from week to week. But I want to start this conversation off with you, Steve, first talking about Paul's album, which, when it debuted on the charts, it debuted at number 3. And then after that, it started to slowly come down the charts. And in about, I don't know, 3 months' time, it's now completely off the charts.
Right.
It's off the top 200. It's nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, so, in fact, I just today went on to Amazon to see where it stood as far as sales, both in here and in England. Here it was number 232, and number 1 is the soundtrack for Frozen, for what it's worth.
Okay.
But even more interestingly, I would have thought it would be doing better in the UK. It's 1,038 in the UK, on Amazon UK, which that quite surprised me.
That's shocking.
Shocked at that.
Yeah.
But it was very, you know, it was really a surprise how quickly it dropped off. The Daily Mail ran an article, and it said that, it mentioned all the publicity and the interviews he did, and my God, I mean, he was in the press everywhere
mm-hmm.
before it was released. And they said, and I'm guessing, of course, they're talking about England, that it didn't release, that it didn't reach the top 10 in the digital downloads chart. And that's pretty astounding,
mm-hmm.
pretty astounding.
Yeah.
Especially for the fact that it was a great album. It got excellent reviews from people, you know, from the mainstream rock media who you would not have expected to praise it. It landed in the top 10 of Rolling Stone's albums of the year. You know, all that, and it really kind of, you know, it just kind of slithered away. And
mm-hmm.
it was really a shock.
Well, first of all, before you even continue, I just want to know your opinion, because we haven't talked about this before this show.
Okay.
Like
I
said,
we like to surprise. We should let people know we like to surprise each other.
Yeah, I think, you know, it helps. It would make the show a bit more spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
But in your opinion, is this a success for you? Is it a failure, or is it somewhere in the middle? Because no matter what, it still debuted at number 3 in America. I'm just talking about the United States for right now. And let's face it, the man is 71 years old. He's had a career now. We've known him in America for 50 years. And still, is there a part of you that says, no matter what, it's impressive he debuted at number 3? Or do you still feel like this should have done a lot better?
Normally, under normal circumstances, if this was a Midland album, if this had been a, you know, not a great piece of work, I would have said it was okay for what it was. But given the fact that it really was a great album, and I mean, it exceeded a lot of people's expectations. Given the fact that it was so good, I think I suspect he's disappointed.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm disappointed that it really didn't do, you know, that it didn't do more. I'm not saying it should have done a Justin Bieber or a Katy Perry or anything like that. You know, I'm somewhat realistic given, you know, who, you know, the younger buyers really tend to control the market now and control a lot of things. And
wait, I wouldn't say now. It's mainly been that way for a long time.
Well,
that's
yeah,
more
by now I meant as in, you know, the present day, not necessarily. I wasn't saying today as in, you know, but I mean in this age, it's a young people's market for the, you know, in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite disappointed. I was, well, maybe quite is a bad word, but I was disappointed. I was expecting a lot better. You know, I don't blame Paul. Can't blame Paul on this one.
No,
you know,
not at all.
I think I don't know whether people just didn't respond or after the the market forces that normally are out there, because let's face it, you know, having dealt with people on the internet now for over 5 years, young people have an incredible force. I don't think they even know how much influence they have and how much pressure they have as far as the market goes.
Right.
And I think that really had, you know, I mean, there's so much out there. If you look on the Billboard charts, there's just so many different artists for their attention. And Paul just is not at the top of their list. Now, granted, for, you know, older people like us, for young Beatle fans, and there are plenty of them out there, I've talked to them, and, you know, and they made themselves known. You know, there are people who look forward to Paul, who love Paul, who loved the album, and I just think it was just a little on the disappointing side that it didn't happen as strong as it did. I don't know if that was radio's fault. I mean, you can speak to that probably better than I could.
And I will. Yeah.
As much radio play as he should have.
Uh-huh.
I thought he did pretty decent. I don't know again, you get the same situation where you have younger people, the young people's influence controlling the marketplace, and all their artists, you know, are trying to get airplay too. So I don't, you know, I mean, what do you think about the radio play that New got?
It got some. I think it deserved a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I brought up on previous shows, and it's worth mentioning certainly for this show, is how much radio has changed. I mean, if you go back to the 70s when all four Beatles were doing so well with their solo careers, they were doing well because they were getting airplay. They were selling records because they were played on the radio. And in the case of Paul, he got massive airplay back then because he was played on top 40 radio. He was played on rock stations. As other formats developed, like a soft rock, adult contemporary, he got played on there. So he had massive exposure, and that helped his record sell. Whereas if you look at today, the thing is, radio is so specialized, It's so niche-oriented.
Right.
And the only format of radio that will play a new Paul McCartney album is what they call AAA. AAA stands for Adult Album Alternative. And it's a lot of rock. It's mainly new music with a little bit of classic rock thrown in. But it's done in the style of continuing along the lines of great music of 60s and 70s and 80s, edgy mm-hmm. music. It is alternative. A lot of it's melodic. A lot of it is acoustic. And Paul, for quite a while, has been getting some airplay on that format of radio. And it's the only format, as I said, that will play a new Paul McCartney album, with the exception, and we brought this up in a previous show with Kisses on the Bottom, because that album was played on what they call adult standards.
Right.
What we used to call middle-of-the-road stations, the stations that always played Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Barbra Streisand, some big band. Those stations have now evolved, and they're playing more contemporary music, and they're playing a lot of stuff that oldies radio, if you're someone that likes to listen to oldies radio that plays 60s music and 70s music, a lot of those stations are not playing that music anymore, and it's migrating over to adult standards. But as far as something like Kisses on the Bottom, Rod Stewart was played on that format, Michael Bublé, those kind of artists, and even American Idol-type artists get played on that format of radio to make it more contemporary, and so that that audience can still survive, and so that you can still have younger people who are embracing some of the newer artists, like the American Idol artists, you know, Susan Boyle or someone like that. That's all mixed into that format. But AAA is the only format that really will play a new Paul McCartney album. And I'm not saying that classic rock stations will not play him. If they play him at all with a new album that comes out, they'll play him for a week just out of respect and let the album die. And I'm also not talking about weekly Beatles shows, because on those shows, hopefully, they're playing the new music of Paul.
That goes with the thing. Let me bring up a question that I just kind of thought of while you were talking about that. Do you think the long drop off hurt him? I'm tempted to say it did.
I think so. I think he honestly felt that this record was going to do something. And I can't recall a time when Paul did more to promote an album than he did with this one.
Yeah, he really went crazy. I mean, but not counting, let's not even discuss the surprise appearances in New York and London, because those are kind of gimmicky things. But all the press he did, it was just absolutely amazing.
The man was on Jimmy Kimmel. He performed out in the street in Hollywood Boulevard.
Yep.
He was on Jimmy Fallon. He played the iHeart Radio Festival. He played the Bonnaroo Festival. He did the two surprise concerts, like you said, New York and London. A lot of the appearances that he did on TV shows, you can just look up on the internet. You can watch it whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the problem is that most of the people who care about that stuff are the hardcore fans anyway that are going to watch. In order for someone like Paul McCartney, and I can apply this to just about any veteran artist, you've got to be able to attract young fans and get them interested in your music. You can't just rely on the first generation and second generation fans, because no matter what, no matter who the artist is, that number's going to drop over years. It just happens for anybody. And that's just something that you have to realize. It's a reality.
Right.
People's lives change. They don't follow the latest Paul McCartney album. And like I said, you can apply that to so many veteran acts. They get married. They have kids. They have other priorities. They don't keep on top of it like they used to. So you're always going to have those hardcore fans that care the most. But in order for the sales to remain strong, you've always got to win over new audiences. And the AAA stations, like I told you about, they are key in whether or not Paul's records go anywhere. But it's only one format of radio, and he honestly gets played minimally. He doesn't get heavy airplay. It's more the newer artists of today, Arctic Monkeys, Arcade Fire, you know,
right.
He's
done his darndest to try and, you know, to try and get that audience. I mean, playing all those festivals.
Right. But also, just to go on about this point, the thing is that radio, they don't want their audience to get older. because they don't want to attract that demographic, because those people, as they get older, spend less money. So they're always going to be trying to reach out to younger audiences and play younger artists. And that doesn't mean that the older artists don't get played. They just don't get played that much.
Right.
And you could point to so many artists, and we brought up a few here on this show, like David Bowie, for example. David Bowie released his first album in 10 years last year, and it got great reviews. Didn't sell that well. It didn't get that much airplay, to tell you the truth. Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh released an album last year, his first album in 20 years. I didn't hear it at all.
Interestingly enough, you know, today, and I should mention the day, this is the 26th, NME gave out their awards in England, and I happened to tune into the streaming because Paul was going to get an award.
Right.
But Paul was also up for an award, and I didn't even know that until they mentioned it.
Yeah.
And both he and David Bowie were nominated in the same category, and I can't remember which category it was.
It's best,
I think it was Best Live Act.
No, it's Best Solo Artist.
Was it Best Solo Artist?
Yeah.
Okay. And they both lost.
Okay.
They both lost. And it was funny, the woman who came up, and I didn't recognize her, her name, the woman who came up thanked Bowie, but not McCartney.
Wow.
Which I thought was really, really surprising of all, because McCartney was there.
Uh-huh.
He was there to get an award. He was getting the Songwriter Award. And he did come up and receive that and said a short speech.
Right.
But it was very surprising that she noticed Bowie and not McCartney. And I don't know if that's a statement or not, but it's interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. Huh.
So.
But anyway, on this very subject, this is part of the problem here. The only way that I believe someone like Paul McCartney, or someone, a veteran in his 60s or 70s, who had his time when his record sold very well, and it's nothing like that now, the only way that's going to happen is if they're able to reach young audiences again. And
right.
Unless their music is programmed to young people, that's not going to happen. Because in the case of Paul, you know, he went above and beyond promoting this new album. Most of the people, like I said, who went and watched all this stuff were the people who cared the most, who were going to buy his CD anyway.
Right.
So, you know, it was a brilliant thing, and we discussed this when he did the Frank Sinatra School, when he performed with his band. And that was broadcast on the internet, and those were mainly high school students who loved the fact that they had a legend there, who knew who Paul McCartney was, by the way. He's playing in front of young people, and it's very important to do that. But as long as the media doesn't program that music to young people, that's what's going to happen to everybody.
And the other thing he did with the album itself is he used the four producers.
Yeah.
And he reached, you know, he reached out to different areas of segments of the of music, you know, to different people, different influences, and you know, still, you know, nothing. The Daily Mail mentioned, for example, that Bowie went to number one on the iTunes chart within hours of its release, and topped the charts in 60 countries.
Wow.
Yep.
I didn't know that. I'm only thinking about here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, that's. That's another interesting thing. And, I mean, even, you know, it's even Kisses on the Bottom seem to get a lot more notice than this did. Did you think that?
Certainly it got, well, first of all, New got a lot of praise, like you said, as far as
right.
The critics are concerned. And so did Kisses on the Bottom. It's just I think that it was, I shouldn't even call it new territory for Paul because he's always explored this kind of music anyway.
Right.
But the fact that he made a full album of it and it was something new for him to do,
right.
a full album like that. And so, you know, he got another format of radio to play him and it made number one on the jazz charts,
yeah.
You know, in America. But again,
That was quite a shock, actually. I didn't expect that at all.
Well, the power of the name and also... Well, the fact that, you know, it's Paul McCartney, just like his classical albums went to number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. You know, he's still going to sell hundreds of thousands of units.
No matter what he puts out. Avant-garde stuff will sell to a certain extent.
The numbers are starting to dwindle, and that's going to happen if you don't find new audiences somehow. And we're talking about terrestrial radio and its effect on the sales of Paul's album. But, you know, the argument could be made, and you're dealing with someone who, you know, my whole life has been terrestrial radio and working in it. There may very well come a time when the airplay on terrestrial radio has very little effect on record sales, because young people today may not be listening as much to FM radio and AM radio. Well, AM radio, not AM radio for music, but they may turn to internet radio or do file sharing or go on YouTube. However they discover the music, it's a different way of learning the music as opposed to radio stations programming it to you.
You would also think that the, not necessarily the, you know, magazines like Rolling Stone and things like that would have an influence, but also, and I'm not trying to tout myself, but writers like myself and, you know, people who are the Beatles, you mentioned the Beatle radio shows. I mean, you would think that to a certain extent that would have some effect too, but I don't know, you know.
There are Beatles shows that hardly play solo music too.
That's true. I mean, everybody does their own thing as far as that goes, but I'm just saying the ones that are out there that are doing a constant, you know, I mean, for example, like Every Little Thing, like you do, you mm-hmm. know, that kind of thing. You would think that, you know, somewhere, you know, those kind of, you know, shows would have some kind of effect somewhere.
Well, it needs to be on more stations.
Well,
help,
that's true.
Help, help.
That's true. Get Ken on 200 more stations, please. You know,
well, you know, the thing is, and I know that there'll always be people who will disagree with what I'm about to say. You know, the saddest thing about this whole thing is, as someone who my whole life I've said what matters the most is the music. In this case, the music doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter how great the music may be. The quality of the music is not as relevant. What is different about the music industry? Well, it's always been about this, but it's more about this now than it's ever been before. It's more about marketing than it is about music and where you place music these days. You know, every single artist is grouped into a certain category. Either they're an alternative artist or an adult contemporary artist. And in most cases, they get played on one format of radio. And if they're lucky, more than one. And those artists are the ones that actually will end up selling the most.
Yeah.
But I was just talking about the veteran artists. Elton John just released an album, The Diving Board, which got great reviews.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear it anywhere on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're talking about people of that stature, the people that we're mentioning, it's not just Paul McCartney, people who, they're part of our heritage, they can't even get airplay or very little airplay on terrestrial radio these days.
You can kind of parallel that with the whole situation with, you know, with On Air and with the U.S. albums.
Well, with On Air, it's a similar situation because that album debuted, I think, at number 7, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And then
I think so, yeah.
And then it went right down the charts. So all the fans that wanted it knew about it and bought it in the first week or 2 weeks, and then it took a dive.
According to Variety said in a story they ran on the 28th of January, said it had moved 118,000 units. That's pretty weak. It's pretty weak.
Well, so, that's the thing. You know, for all of our lives, we've expected everything the Beatles to do, especially as a group, to go to number one.
Mm-hmm.
If it didn't go to number one, it was a flop. And if it did go to number one, you couldn't praise it because, you know, people would say, well, of course, it's the Beatles.
Right.
People came to expect that. So when something like, the Beatles, if you study the whole history from the 60s on up and their record sales, and I'm only talking about America because I can't really comment about the rest of the world.
Right.
But every decade it's been different. You couldn't top the 60s, obviously, for the sales of the Beatles as it was happening. And in the 70s, it was at a very exciting time because in addition to the solo music doing as well as it did, you had all the different compilations coming out, and they all did well. 1962 to 66, 67 to 70, rock and roll music. Double albums that sold very well. And then in the 80s, it really took a dive. There wasn't that much excitement going on in the 80s as far as the group recordings are concerned. You had compilations like Real Music and 20 Greatest Hits that didn't do that well. Then the 90s, it picked up all over again with Live at the BBC and the 3 anthology releases. And then in the previous decade, we had the Beatles 1, which became the biggest selling CD of the decade. But mm-hmm. we also had CDs that didn't do that well. Let It Be Naked is another, you know, example of an album that debuted in the top 10 and then it tanked. Yellow Submarine song track, which actually was 1999, I think, that didn't do all that well. Went top 20.
Both of those were real niche releases, though. I mean, Let It Be Naked was, it was a niche release. I think that's the best way to put it.
But there are people who think no matter what, if it's the Beatles, it should go to number one.
Well, true. I mean, yeah, that's absolutely true. But on the same note, there was the whole situation of why it was released, you know, what was the purpose of it. It just didn't work, I think. A lot of people miss the whole reasoning behind that. I mean, the best thing about Let It Be Naked, and I don't want to get off track, was the fact that it sounded fantastic.
True.
The whole issue of taking the instruments off and everything was just, I don't want to go into that now. I mean, I don't think it was a good idea, but that's beside the point. I mean, I do love the sound on it, though, but that's...
I'm just saying with the Beatles over the years, there have been peaks and valleys. More peaks, I think, than valleys, but... And you can look at the remasters coming out in 2009, which did very well. When the music was available on iTunes, that did very well.
The mono vinyl will do very well. I predict that.
Okay.
Apparently the U.S. albums did not do fantastically, but you know it did sit on the charts. I think it's still there. I'd have to look it up and see. But
with these 13 CDs that are on the charts now,
mm-hmm.
you do have some that are the American.
Well, I think releases. I think they're basically all the American. I'm just saying the set itself did really well. It looks like it wasn't on the charts this week at all. The whole set, but the individual albums are, and that's a byproduct of that. So,
but what we're getting at here, if we're not driving the point too much, is that because of the media being what it is and the way that radio programs our culture here in America, because they don't really program to what they believe to be older audiences, that affects the sales of everything. And I firmly believe that. And the question that I would pose to you, and maybe all of our listeners should think about, is let's just say we turn back the clock right now and it was the 70s. Let's just say Paul McCartney now in 2013, 2014, released New and got the same kind of airplay that he got when Band on the Run was hot and Venus and Mars was hot, Wings at the Speed of Sound was hot. Do you think that album would have done just as well as those albums?
Yeah, I do. I think it would have done great.
Okay, if radio was similar and he got massive airplay on different formats of radio, that's how it would be today. I really do think that the album would do just as well as those albums did in the 70s. There's really no difference.
And remember, too, that back in the 70s, the Beatles were still a lightning rod. They were still, they were still hot. I shouldn't say they were still hot. They were still, trending is probably the closest word. Whereas nowadays, although they trend during things like the February 9th thing, they got really hot there for a couple weeks. Things are cooling off now. Whereas, you know, you get people like Justin Bieber, who stays hot all the time, doing stupid things, and Paul McCartney, who just is himself. So,
well, yeah, it's just it's incredible when you think about it's how the media has changed everything. It really has nothing to do with the quality of the music. And I know that there'll be some fans who may have lost interest in Paul or maybe any of the solo Beatles over the years, and they might think that one Beatles music isn't as good as it used to be. And as far as I'm concerned, and I'm not going to be one of those people who will say every single thing Paul McCartney has done has been great. He's had great albums. He's had good albums. The new album, to me, was a great album. But I can also say, and this has been going on for quite a while, how he's gotten less airplay through the years. Even though in the 80s, I can remember, you know, My Brave Face getting airplay and going into the 90s with Hope of Deliverance, and he got a lot of airplay on VH1 and that kind of thing. But radio airplay was diminishing, and it has been diminishing for him for quite a while here. And the question is, without the radio airplay, can his record sell? You know, and my opinion is that in order for him to ever be, to ever have any really good sales again, he's got to have the younger audience who discovers him. And for them to discover him, how do they get exposed to it? Do they need to have radio stations program the music to them, or will they have to discover it themselves? And it's very hard to get people to just suddenly have an interest in an artist again. And it's also not that easy for young people to have an interest in an artist, like it or not, who's 70 years old, regardless of how great the music may be. Because some of them may be turned off by the fact that the person's that old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just reality. You know, I can't speak for myself here because I grew up in an environment with my parents where I was exposed to Frank Sinatra and big band music. And I, as a little kid, I embraced all that stuff. I didn't say, oh, that's all old music. But then there are a lot of young people who will look at an artist who's in their 60s or 70s and think, well, you know, I can't relate to that, or I shouldn't be supporting that artist. I should be supporting some of the newer artists of today. I'm not saying all young people are that way. I think it's a great feeling every time I go and I see Paul or Ringo in concert or any artist in their 60s or 70s. And it's not just the people who grew up with them when they were making their mark, when they made their impact. There are younger people going to those concerts.
Sure.
And, you know, when I see a Paul McCartney concert and I see not just 50 and 60-year-olds, but teenagers through their 40s, it's very widespread. To assume that all the fans are a certain age group and just the age group of people who grew up with the artist when they were at their peak in terms of popularity is wrong. But that's how our industry thinks. And it's one of the things that I've had a real tough time grasping. And it's not just because it's Paul or Ringo or any of the people that I love. It's this mindset, and you may even feel the same way, Steve, that when an artist has their success and they have it for a certain limited amount of time, whether it's 5 years or 10 years, it's the people who were young, say in their teens or 20s, exposed to that music for the first time, those are the people that made the music made the biggest impact on them, and those will be your core followers for the rest of your career. Now, to some degree, you may think that's right, you know, and as long as people who program radio think that way, and I can speak for myself when I've tried to syndicate my radio program, and syndicators have said to me, oh, a Beatles show, we'll go after the baby boomers. Why do you have to think that way? There are young people discovering the Beatles today. There are 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds. They're not just 50 and 60-year-olds.
Right.
You know, but that's the way people in our industry think. Do you think that's right, Steve?
I don't know. You actually stumped me there.
Well, you know, it's something that is something that it's reality. It's mm-hmm. the way our business is.
I mean, I have no, you know, I'm accepting the fact, and there are probably some people near my age that, you know, are having a little trouble thinking this, that, you know, the Beatles aren't, this is not 1964 anymore. I mean, the Beatles are still the greatest band that ever was. There's no absolute question about that.
Right.
But the fact is that the Beatles do not have the standing with everyone that they did years ago. It's just the way it is. And it was bound to happen. You have to give Capitol and now Universal and everybody, you know, and Jeff Jones and everybody at Apple, you know, credit for keeping that spark going.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a great job.
Yeah.
But again, they're working, you know, time is a tough situation.
It is. It really is, and it's not something for which there's an easy answer.
Nope.
And for people like us who think the group, and for me, the solo music as well, is the greatest music we've been brought up on, I want to see this music survive. And it's very interesting that we're talking about this, Dee, because in previous shows, I've held back my tongue.
I don't think
I just want to say this, because when we've talked about Paul and the new album, you were saying, you were predicting it was going to explode. And you even said when Al Sussman was on the show with us, he's got a big following, got a huge, you know, loyal following. Well, where were these people when New came out?
I have to say, you know, I was one of those that was very surprised at what had happened. I didn't expect that at all.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm not surprised. I was expecting this, given the trend of the previous decades and how radio has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, and I can't emphasize this enough, it's got nothing to do with the quality of the music. The quality of the music is irrelevant. Paul McCartney could put out the best album of his career right now, and it could go nowhere. Because
well,
of the way...
I think he learned that certainly after, you know, with New. I think he's realized that.
Well, you can point to so many albums he's done since the 70s that I think were great albums that didn't perform nearly as well as it deserved to.
Mm-hmm.
Flowers in the Dirt, I thought, was brilliant. And Flaming Pie, I thought, was brilliant. And I love Tug of War. And even though Tug of War went to number one, it didn't have the staying power that it deserved to have. But a lot of that is really, I put that all on radio and the media. I really do.
Tug of War is one of my favorite Paul albums. I love that album.
Uh-huh.
It's fantastic.
So it's because radio is constantly changing and because of who they're programming the music to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not just Paul. It's a lot of veterans who are having a real tough time. And there's plenty of them who are being ignored on the radio. And it's a crime. You know, these are people that should be given massive airplay because of all the great music that they've given us. Whether we're talking about Paul, Elton John, David Bowie, any of these people. You know, and there's no place for them, really, on the radio, in terrestrial radio anyway.
They're being elbowed out by people like, you know, Miley Cyrus and
it's not just that. You know, you're targeting just that audience. That's what I call top 40 or contemporary hit radio.
Mm-hmm.
There's other formats of radio that play young artists. It's not just them. So it's just that's the way it is right now. You could put out the greatest album of your career. And look at Ringo. Ringo can't get arrested. He's put out the best music the last 22 years from Time Takes Time on, you know, with the exception of the Ringo album. I think it's the strongest body of work that he's done. And radio won't touch him.
Yeah, and he jokes about it, too, in concert, which is really kind of...
It's got to hurt him, too.
Yeah.
You know, and you also know that if those very same albums... Time Takes Time, or Vertical Man, or Ringo-Rama, any of those albums, Choose Love, if they came out after Ringo, because he was given airplay at that time, those albums would have done well. What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
It's radio. It's how it's changed. So, and we haven't even gotten back to our initial comments about the 13 CDs that are on the charts right now, which I think, you know, you still have to look at and be so grateful for. Because anytime I see...
It'll be interesting to see how long they stay there.
Yeah, but also kind of like what you were alluding to before, that's more event-driven than anything else. Usually whenever something happens like, well, obviously the remastered catalog coming out, then the albums will be on the charts again. That's what it takes for these albums to reappear again. Or for something like the U.S. albums to come out, something like that.
If they do something, if Capitol does something... you know, big later on this year, another 50th anniversary thing. Maybe they put out Hollywood Bowl. Maybe they, well, we know they're going to do the mono vinyl box, which they've already said. If they do something, you know, crazy like that, you know, maybe we'll have another, you know, a chart explosion. It's an interesting situation.
Yeah. So we're just analyzing right now the success
right.
or lack of, depending on how you look at it. I still think that Paul debuting at number three is something to be grateful for.
Oh, you know, I'm sure he was real happy with that.
Yeah.
I think he wishes that things went a little further.
I do know that Queenie Eye, for example, got decent airplay on AAA radio.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it on the charts, usually in the top 25.
I would not have thought that that song was going to get... When I first heard that song, I thought it was kind of a throwaway. I really didn't expect that it would do that well. I was very surprised he pulled it out as a single. It wasn't the one I was thinking about.
It's funny you say that, because the first few times I listened to the album, I wasn't really impressed with that song so much. It grew on me. I instantly heard Everybody Out There being so damn catchy that I thought that should be a single. And I also think I Can Bet would be a really good single. But no, I love Queenie Eye now. And I honestly hope that the record company doesn't just give up on it. I think I Can Bet should come out as a single. But that's just me.
Yeah. Early Days was another one I thought would have actually been, with all the buzz around the song, might have gotten pulled out. But who knows? I mean, there's still time. They could still do something. The question is, will they?
And despite the fact that it fell off the charts so quickly, I wouldn't be surprised if it was up for Grammys next year.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to mention that earlier. A couple of people asked me around the Grammys whether New was up for it, and it's not. Not yet. But yeah, I think there's...
Well, it came out too late.
Right.
To make the recent Grammy Awards.
Right,
so.
And it's going to be... that's going to be fun to watch next year to see if it does any good, especially with all the critical acclaim it got. See if it pulls off a statue next year. We'll cross our fingers for that. I mean, if Kisses on the Bottom can do what it did, then who knows?
Well, Kisses on the Bottom, in terms of the album chart, still went top 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it actually was on the charts much longer.
Right.
Than New. Although, like I said, Kisses on the Bottom was also on the jazz charts.
Right. And I wondered if he would consider doing a sequel.
I hope he does. I want to see him do a lot more recording. And don't get me wrong, I love the fact that he keeps on touring. And as we speak, we're hearing about the possibility of him playing in South America this year.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm sure...
Yeah, that's... he hasn't announced it as we're talking. This hasn't been announced officially, but the South American media has been buzzing like crazy with quote, confirmations of gigs. So.
Right. Well, I'm always ready for a new McCartney album anyway. I just hope that he stays very active in the studio and doesn't just focus on performing live.
I hope he doesn't wait as long this time. We'll see what happens. I hope we get a new album. I'm sure we'll get some kind of new album before 6 years are up, but I hope we get a new studio album sooner.
Yeah, well, before we close here, I just wanted to mention that the Beatles 1 CD is actually the CD that is leading the pack here on the album charts. It's actually the number 20 album in the country.
Yeah, as of February 26th when we're taping this.
Yeah, and that's amazing to me. I mean,
that is pretty amazing.
The one album is a miracle to itself. I mean, I'm not surprised at how well it did the previous decade, but it really was a brilliant package that was put together. I mean, if you ever wanted to give somebody a starter CD on the Beatles, what better way than to just have all the number one songs? And like what they did in America back in the 80s when they had the Beatles' 20 Greatest Hits, which was the exact same concept, they just applied it to the CD format, and then they added the UK number ones, and so you got 27 songs on one CD. You couldn't ask for more value for the money.
And everybody, and that formula got copied quickly.
Right.
I mean, as soon as everybody saw how much, you know, how successful they were with it, Elvis, for one, did it, which I thought was hilarious. So, whatever.
But it's nice to see that it's doing so well. And it may end up being, for all you know, it could end up being the biggest selling Beatles CD of all time.
It could end up with a, you know, Dark Side of the Moon kind of situation where Dark Side of the Moon is always on the Billboard charts. And I think it's an album that we will look for. Even at lulls, it will be there. I'm very confident in that.
Okay. And also the Beatles' Love is doing really well on the
charts.
Yeah,
that's kind of a surprise, actually. I'm not a Love hater. I've read people who say they won't even touch it because of what it is. For whatever reason, I like listening to that, and I don't know why. I'm not a big fan of mashups, but I like what the way Giles took and George did that.
Yeah,
they created a very pleasant sound. I've heard alternate loves that don't sound nearly as smooth and as enjoyable, but that's a good one. That's
yeah,
really a good one.
If you like that kind of format. If you do like mashups, then yeah. I think Love was done very well. But I think the reason why it is charting as well as it is because they mix that into the program on CBS. You had the Cirque du Soleil characters floating around.
Maybe so. I think there wasn't really enough Love there for people to know what Love really was.
Hmm. You
I
might
think
be right.
If they had done the some of the effects, or if they had had the whole troupe there. But they just had the dancers on, you know, the guys in the air, and that really didn't, unless you've seen the show, you don't really know what that's all about, unless you've seen other Cirque du Soleil shows. But the Beatles show, you know, is just really interesting on its own. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that puts a wrap on this conversation. We want to let you know that if you'd like to get in touch with us, we have our own email address here, which is thingswesaidtodayradioshow@gmail.com. You can get in touch with me directly at everylittlething@att.net.
And you can catch me at beatlesexaminer@gmail.com and on Facebook.
And if you can, please check out my website, kenmichaelsradio.com, because every single week, there's Beatles trivia on there, and you can win some great prizes. And there's loads and loads of interviews with people connected to the Beatles, including, most recently, Mark Rivera, who you just wrote a really good review on.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Stewart, and you had a really good interview yourself with Chad and Beatles Examiner.
And that, let me say that Rivera album really surprised me. It's really, really good.
Oh, I agree. You'll be very pleasantly surprised at how well the guy can sing.
And yeah, that was a shock, actually. That was kind of surprising. But yeah, the whole album is just very well done.
It's very varied, you know, a mixture of R&B, funk, ballads. You know, it's really good.
The one track, and I mentioned it in the review I wrote, was the cover of Spanish Castle Magic.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix.
I think my mouth dropped as I was listening to it. It was like, wow.
Uh-huh.
It's not only does it sound, he sounds good. I mean, his vocal obviously is kind of patterned a little bit after Jimi Hendrix, but the band is just kicking on that one. They really are. So
you got Billy Joel on there.
Yes.
He's playing.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah, Billy Joel sounds.
He's on the Hammond B3.
The Hammond B3, yeah, he really comes in there. He's not way in the background on that one. Sure.
And you do have Ringo playing on
and
one
you have
song.
Ringo playing on it too.
Yeah,
so,
really
there
good.
You go.
In fact, on my website with my interview with Morak, you can hear excerpts of the songs from the new album, which is called Common Bond.
Yep.
By the way,
it's a great album.
All right.
Anyway,
so this has been fun.
Yes, it has.
For Things We Said Today, I'm Ken Michaels, thanking each and every one of you for listening, and I'll see you next time.
And this is Steve Marinucci saying, take care, everyone, and we'll see you next time.